Well, I'm going to try to preach a sermon right now that hopefully leaves you thinking, I'm going to do everything I can to never miss church again. That's a bit of a big goal, I know. But thinking that not because this is the most amazing sermon you've ever heard, but thinking that because you've deepened in your understanding of this one particular concept, this one particular theme that runs right through the Bible, the theme of gathered. Now, some of you guys have, if you've been with us for a few years, you've heard some of this before and you've spent time digging into this. I want to say to you that I honestly believe that the better you can understand this concept, get your head and your heart around it, it has the opportunity, the potential to actually revolutionize the way you think and live, and particularly the way you approach church. It's a different kind of sermon tonight. We've not got just one chunk that we're just going to work through. That's kind of our normal practice here in church. Because it's a theme that we need to trace through the scriptures, we're going to do a bit of Bible flicking. So if you're new to this, don't stress. There's a table of contents in the front of your Bible. Don't be afraid to use it or look on with someone around you. But we are going to look at a number of passages. Try to keep up. We're trying to trace this theme of gathered right through the scriptures. Let me start by saying this. I am very grateful to have grown up in a church community where I actually learned and came to know Jesus from a really early age. However, unfortunately, I actually did develop a pretty bad attitude towards church when I was younger. And I think that meant I had a pretty poor approach to church. I disliked people, and I say these things to my own shame, right? Here's me showing you how sinful I am. I disliked people, I'm talking in the past. I disliked people, thought they were annoying and weird and super daggy. Of course, I'm not. I was embarrassed to associate with church. I got teased for being a churchy when I was a kid. I felt like I had the right to whinge and complain when things in church weren't epic or boring. I resented having to go to church because I felt like it was wasting my time that I could have been spending on the weekends doing other things. Now, you'll be relieved to hear that I don't feel that way anymore about church. You'd hope so, wouldn't you? But maybe you're a little bit like that too. You're here, but some of those things are real for you. I'll tell you what though, I am so grateful now to feel very differently towards church. What changed? Nothing about church changed. Things didn't necessarily get better in church. What changed was me and my thinking and my understanding and my perspective on church. That's what changed. There are many things that have helped me over time. A lot of people have helped me and invested in me and prayed for me. But this one particular concept, the concept of being gathered, as I've learned to get my head and heart around it more and more, it's helped me profoundly in my approach to church. And I want to take you on that journey tonight to trace this theme through the scriptures. So come with me and we're going to start right back there in the beginning. So open up to Genesis, the first book of the Bible, and get ready to do some flicking. Genesis chapter 2 and chapter 1, you actually see how God is creating the world. But what you can see clearly is not just how he does it, but why he does it. God's purpose in creating anything at all is made quite clear to us. God's intention in creating people was to, catch this, gather them together under him. And so God creates a beautiful place called the garden, and then he creates people, his first two image bearers, a man and a woman, and he gathers them to each other and plants them in the garden. Look at verse 22 of chapter 2. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib he had taken out of man, and he brought her to the man. There's the first gathering act in the Bible. God makes a woman from the man, and then he brings the woman to the man. He gathers them together. This is the first wedding in history. God effectively is the one who officiates over the wedding, and he's the one who presents the first bride. But really, this first wedding is not just a wedding, it's the first gathering of people. It's the first church in history. People being brought together to belong to each other. And you notice what happens when they're first brought together? There's a fair bit of celebrating going on. The man, as he sees this wife presented to him, probably because she's naked, but probably presented to him, verse 23. That was a joke, guys. but not really. Verse 23. This is now bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. He starts rapping poetry and singing like a bohemian. I don't know, but he's just going for it. He's expressing his celebration here because he's excited that he now belongs to someone and she belongs to him. And the concept is that they're gathered together to live under the rule of God, under the word and command of God. God gives them commands. You can see that back in verse 17. There's one particular tree. Don't eat the fruit off this tree. But they're not simply to live under a law of God. They're to live under the relationship with God, which is to hear his word, hear his command, and obey it. God speaks to them. God walks with them in the cool of the garden. You pick up that in chapter 3. When he appears there, they know he's coming. They're used to him coming. There's a beautiful relationship. But the concept is gathered together under God. This is the first gathering. It's the purpose of creation. The concept of gathering is embedded into the created order, and it's wonderful. The gathering was to begin there and to grow from there. They're instructed to multiply and fill the earth. The garden was meant to grow. The people were meant to grow. The church was meant to grow. That was God's created intention. And I tell you what, you can see how central this is to God's, the purpose of creation for God, by how when you get to chapter 3 and sin enters the deal, the big thing that gets smashed up is this concept of gathering. Sin comes and reverses gathering. It scatters the people and God's created intent is ruined. Come to chapter 3 with me now. Adam and Eve, together under God, decide that they've got a better idea. They want to be together, but not under God. They want to be together under their own authority. And so they actually reject God by rebelling from the one command that he gives them. And you can see them rebelling from that command in verse 6 of chapter 3. When the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it, and she also gave some to her husband who was with her, and they both ate from it. It sounds kind of innocent, but effectively what's going on here is they're saying, we want to be together but not under you anymore. We think we know better. We feel like you're holding us back from good things, or you're holding good things back from us, and so they sin. And they sit under their own rule and they reject God. And the consequences for their sin immediately is that it smashes their gathering. And you can see that straight away, that they're scattered almost immediately, in a sense, from each other. Look at verse 7. Then the eyes of both of them opened and they realized they were naked, so they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves. So the first thing they do is invent the first fig leaf bikini and start to cover themselves up. But who are they covering themselves up from? There's no one else around. It's just them. You see, they're covering themselves up from each other. They all of a sudden now feel like they need protection from each other. They feel vulnerable around each other, fearful of each other. They're being scattered from each other, separated from each other. And later when God comes down and commands Adam, who's meant to be leading the deal here, to actually give an account for why they've done that, Adam immediately starts playing the blame game. And he said, look, the woman that you put here with me, she made me do it. And immediately, you know, you see the consequence of sin separating them and causing them to be against each other and blaming each other. When you get to verse 16, where you actually see the deliberate judgment of God on them, he actually says that that will be the case for them in their marriage. Look at verse 16, the last part of verse 16. Your desire will be for your husband and he will rule over you. But desire there is not a good thing. Desire there is the desire to dominate. And so basically says one of the consequences of sin is you're just going to be trying to dominate each other now, trying to rule over each other now. There's going to be conflict in your marriage. Sin is going to scatter you from each other. That's what happens for them immediately. Scattered from each other and scattered from God. You can see when God first turns up, verse 8 there, the first thing they think to do is hide from him and run from him. They don't want to be with him anymore. They're scared and afraid of him. And part of their judgment by God is to be driven out of the garden, away from God and his blessing of provision. Sin drives people apart from each other, and sin drives people away from God. Sin reverses gathering, God's very intention for creation. And what we need to see is how sin continues to do that through history now, because that's one of the big themes that you see through the Bible. God's created intention was to gather, but watch how sin scatters people time and time again through history. All you got to do is flick to the very next chapter, in chapter 4 of Genesis, and you see the very next generation, Adam and Eve's first two kids, Cain and Abel. Cain kills Abel, and the result of that, verse 10, God judges him and he says, "What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you're under a curse, driven from the ground, which opened up its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield crops for you. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth." And Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is more than I can bear. Today you've driven me away from the land, and I will be forbidden from your presence. I will be a restless wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." Who's going to find him? Who knows? That's another question. But like, the concept here is that the judgment for Cain, are you with me? Are you following me? The judgment for Cain is that he's going to be scattered. He's going to be driven away from the blessings of God. He's going to be driven away from his family. That's the consequence of sin. Keep flicking through Genesis. You get to Noah in chapter 5 and chapter 6, and we find that God makes a devastating, you know, claim on humanity there, that they're absolutely wicked, and God decides to judge their wickedness by scattering them in a very heavy way. He sends a flood, which actually destroys the lot of them, except for Noah and his family. Here is where you start to see the glimpse of how God saves. Sin scatters, and God saves by gathering. He gathers Noah and his family on the ark, and he rescues them and starts again with them. You keep flicking through Genesis, you get to chapter 11. Are you with me? I want to hear those pages turning. Chapter 11, you get the Tower of Babel, where again humanity, for their own name's sake, in pride, are actually trying to build a tower up into heaven. And God sees the pride of humanity and he judges them. And look at verse 7 and 8, how he judges them in chapter 11. "Come, let us go down and confuse their languages so that they will not understand each other." Verse 8, "So the Lord scattered them from there all over the earth." Sin scatters. Now you move on from here and you get Abraham in chapter 12. And from Abraham, God makes a promise that he's going to make a people. And by the end of Genesis, a people has come from Abraham, a people about a million strong. But the only problem is, by the time you get to the end of Genesis, the beginning of Exodus, is those people find themselves in slavery in Egypt. So you get to the book of Exodus. And then the book of Exodus, something amazing happens. That's where God decides he's going to rescue his people. He's going to save his people. But there's a little repeated phrase that you get all the way through the book of Exodus. When God, through Moses, keeps saying to Pharaoh, "Let my people go, let my people go," there's a purpose. God wants his people to be released and freed so that they can worship him in the wilderness. You see, the whole point of the Exodus, the whole point of salvation, here's the thing you've got to catch from the beginning. The whole point of salvation is so that God's people could be gathered at Mount Sinai to worship God. God saves by gathering his people back together. Come to the book of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy chapter 28. Deuteronomy is Moses giving his final words to God's people before they're about to step foot into the promised land, and he's calling them to stay under God. God's gathered them together, he's called them to worship him, and he's like begging with them, "Whatever you do, stay together under God, follow his commands." And through all of Deuteronomy, and particularly in this section, he's saying, look, if you obey God's commands and you stay under God, there's going to be incredible blessing for you. It will be wonderful for you to live within your created order here. But then he starts to give some warnings, and he warns them about what will happen for them if they rebel from God and if they sin. And have a look at verse 64 in chapter 28. We'll read from verse 63, actually, chapter 28 of Deuteronomy. Just as it pleased the Lord to make you prosper and increase your number, so it will please him, he's warning them, to ruin and destroy you. You will be uprooted from the land you enter to possess. You know, if you rebel against God, look at verse 64, the Lord will scatter you among the nations from one end of the earth to the other. So the Lord's warned them, you rebel from me, I will scatter you. It's partly the nature of sin, it just scatters, but it's also the judgment of God that he's going to scatter them. Now you'd hope after that kind of warning that God's people would heed the warning and see what's happened in the past and say, look, let's just stay together under God. But of course, tragically, they rebel as well. And you can pick up actually what happens in a number of places. One of them is 2 Kings chapter 25, and in about 587 BC, God's people, because they're living in sin, are scattered. And they're scattered because one big bully neighboring country called Babylon comes down and attacks them and carries them off and scatters them out into other nations. But look at, so really it fulfills the prophecy here of Deuteronomy chapter 28. Now there's one particular prophet that God uses during that time when his people are scattered, and particularly out in Babylon. It's the prophet Ezekiel. So come to Ezekiel with me now. Are you following? Ezekiel chapter 36. And here is the prophecy that God brings to his people, reminding them again why they've been scattered, but then announcing to them something absolutely fantastic about how he's going to save them. Have a look at the language that he uses. So Ezekiel 36, verse 18, first he reminds them why they're out there crying by the river of Babylon, scattered from each other and their land. He says, verse 18, so I poured out my wrath on them because they had shed blood in the land and because they had defiled it with their idols. I dispersed them among the nations and they were scattered through the countries. I judged them according to their conduct and their actions. So he's saying, that's why you're scattered, because of your own sin. And that's why I judge you, by scattering you. But then God says, I'm going to do something else, but I want you to know why I'm going to do this. I'm going to bring a salvation that's unique and you've never seen before. But I want you to know why. And he stresses this point. Look at verse 22. Therefore say to the Israelites, this is what the sovereign Lord says. It's not for your sake, people of Israel, that I'm going to do these things, but for the sake of my holy name, which you've profaned among the nations where you've gone. I will show you the holiness of my great name, which has been profaned. God makes the point as he's announcing salvation to them. Just so you know, this is for the sake of my own name, that I'm going to do something miraculous here. And God announces he's going to do something so incredible, it's never been seen before. And here's what we need to catch. When a people group gets invaded and scattered among other nations, it's typically the end of that nation, because you end up being assimilated into other countries. It's impossible to get them back unless you're God and you can do miraculous works of salvation. Look what God announces he's going to do. He's going to do exactly that. Verse 24, for I will take you out of the nations. I will gather you from all the countries and bring you back to your own land. And that's exactly what God does. He brings his people home. He brings the scattered people back. And it's an amazing act of salvation to gather his people back together. However, as good as this is, this is just a glimpse or a preview or a trailer of the real big ultimate act of gathering that God has in mind for the future. As good as it is for God to gather Noah and his family together, and as good as it is for God to gather his people out of Egypt at Mount Sinai, and as good as this is for God to gather his people back out of exile, he does all this with one big act of future gathering in mind that's the ultimate act. And there's a whole bunch of hints about that act here in this passage. So you read on, verse 25. I will sprinkle clean water on you and you'll be clean, and I'll cleanse you from all your impurities and from your idols. So this ultimate act of gathering in the future is going to be something to do with having your sin washed away, not just being brought back to the land, but having something happen inside of you. Look at verse 26. I'll give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I'll remove your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And when you start reading this, you can't help but to think, whoa, that's something big that he's got in mind here. Like, he's going to do a work inside of people's hearts. He's going to put his spirit in them and he's going to forgive their sin. And friend, as we start reading this, you can't help but to start, you don't need to know much about the Bible to know that, oh, there's something big coming in the future. And friends, the ultimate act of gathering that God does is through Jesus. This just all points us forward to Jesus. So now come to John chapter 11, the other passage that we had read. John chapter 11, and we'll read from verse 50. And friends, here's where it gets real good. Here's where it really starts to warm up, at least for us living this side of Jesus. This is the big final act of gathering, and you can see that it happens through Jesus. The context here is there's a plot to kill Jesus. They're trying to figure out how to do it, but there's one high priest named Caiaphas who prophesies more than he even knows, really, about the whole point of Jesus' death. And here's where we need to understand why Jesus died. If you're drifting, come back. Got to catch this. Look at it. We'll read from verse 50. You do not realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people than the whole nation perish. And then this is a commentary about what the high priest says. He did not say this on his own, but as high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the Jewish nation. And not only for the Jewish nation, but also for, look at this, the scattered children of God, to bring them together and make them one. You got that? Jesus would die to bring back together the scattered children of God to make them one. Can you see here how Jesus, and particularly his death, is the way in which God pulls off this final, ultimate act of gathering people together under him? Now, there's plenty of other verses in the New Testament where you get this very same theme or concept highlighted when you're looking at the purpose of the death of Jesus. Titus chapter 2, verses 11 to 14 would be another place to go. But let me ask you that question. Why did Jesus die? You say, well, so my sin could be forgiven. Yes. Or you say, so that I could have a personal relationship with God. Yes. But ultimately, Jesus died so that you could be gathered into his church. Jesus died to gather us together as people under God. Jesus died to restore the created order and intention that had been broken by sin, so that you and I could be brought back into that design and be part of his people. If you're someone who's come to put your trust in Jesus, you've been saved, but you've been saved for a purpose, and that purpose is to be gathered. You were saved to be gathered. It's so easy for us to just think individualistically about our own salvation. And there are certainly elements to our salvation that are individual. But we can end up thinking entirely about being a Christian as, well, it's just about me and God. And if you've come to Christ that way, you've heard a gospel that's just about you and God and you haven't heard anything else, when people start talking to you about church, you'll be like, that sounds like some kind of afterthought, some kind of tack-on. What, now I've got to come to church as well? It almost sounds like fine print. Come to Jesus. Oh, yes, and then there's this thing called church. But friends, church is not the fine print. Church is the whole point. Church is what Jesus died to create. Church, Jesus died to make church possible. So people say to me, look, Tim, I'm into Jesus, but I'm just not into church. I say, you don't get it. You can't be. You see, if you're into Jesus, then you get into what he is into, and he's seriously into church. Like, so into church, he kind of like shed his blood to make church possible. People say, do you have to go to church to be a Christian? Well, I'll say, You don't get it. If you're asking that question, you don't get it. You don't get why Jesus died. Yeah? Because Jesus died to save sinners so that they could be gathered into his church. It's the whole point. To be a Christian is to be gathered into the church of God. To belong to Jesus is to belong to his church. How can you claim to belong to Jesus and his church but never go to church or be a part of church? It's the equivalent of saying, yeah, I play soccer, or I'm a soccer player, but you never get your boots on, you never get out on the field. Or, yeah, I'm a surfer, but you never get wet. Or, yeah, I'm a member of this gym, but you never go there. And we're probably all guilty of that one. It's just a bit tragic, isn't it, really? But sometimes we miss the whole point. You see, when you put your trust in Jesus, you get gathered up into the most significant gathering of people in the universe. You get saved and gathered. A saved person is a gathered person. A Christian is a gathered one. And there's actually no question about that. The question is this: how well are you as a gathered person going at expressing the fact that you are a gathered one? How well are you going at living in the reality of being a gathered one? So I want to just swim around in this concept just for a few minutes and reflect a little bit about what that might mean. Because I do believe that the more that we get our heads and hearts around this concept, the more obvious it will become for us how to approach church. The more you learn to think about yourself as a gathered one, someone who belongs to God's gathered people, the more it will impact the way you live. It'll impact many ways in which you relate to church. There's many implications for this, but it will impact one particular one, which is the one I'm going to focus on tonight, one particular one, which is simply this: getting to church. Getting to the gathering. I think it'll impact that more than anything. So how do you go at just gathering with the ones you've been gathered to already? How do you go at getting to the gathering? Now, you might be sitting there thinking, Tim, oh, come on, I'm here. I'm here tonight. You're preaching to the choir, mate. I'm gathered. Yeah, but where were you last week? You know? Or the week before that? And where are you going to be next week? Now, I don't have anyone particularly in mind as I say this. Although, if you're thinking, oh, he's talking to me, yeah, I'm talking to you, yeah. Where were you? What's going on? Because if there's one thing this is going to impact, it's simply the getting to the gathering that you've been gathered to. That's the first kind of big application, yeah? And if we can all be growing in our understanding of this, we'll be growing and we'll be saying this to ourselves. We'll be saying, well, this is just who I am now. Yeah? So whenever my people gather, I'm going to be there because I'm part of that gathered people. And I'm going to be there with bells on. Does that make sense? And you try and stop me from being there. In fact, you try and keep me away from God's gathered people that I've been brought into. There have to be something pretty massive to hold me back from being with the people that I've been gathered into. That's what ought to be happening in our hearts as we consider these things. And you know what? I know many of you get this already, because I see it being lived out in your lives. And I'll tell you what, you're a huge encouragement to your brothers and sisters. But let me just share personally what I get encouraged to see. I get massively encouraged by whole swaths of you guys when I see things like this. When I see you get to church, and I'm just going to focus on getting to church tonight. That's the thing. I get really encouraged when I see you guys getting to church, even when it's really cold. And even when it's really hot, and even when there's extreme weather conditions. It's funny, isn't it? We actually do all really, most of us get quite impacted by weather. And that, as funny as that sounds, that can be a very thing that keeps people away. So I almost feel like, you know, those East Coast low kind of extreme weather moments we have. I feel like standing at the door on those nights and just high-fiving people as you come in and go, well done, you brave souls, for getting here. But I do. I get encouraged when it's hot and when it's cold. You know, well done. I get encouraged when I see you here as the healthy members of your family, but someone's sick. And I say that because what can happen is even when there's just one person in your family that's sick, the whole family can stay home. I don't know, just to comfort that one person. How much help do they need? Just leave them on their own, all right? Let the dog look after them or whatever. But like, just, no, of course not. You've got to look after your kids. But like, I do like seeing when you're here, the whole family's not here, but you're here because at least you can be here. Not everyone can be here, but you're here. You're not going to let that keep the whole family home. I get so encouraged when I see people here in church and I'm aware that you've had a massive week, like a huge week where there's been, I don't know, there's just been big relationship blow-ups for you, or there's been a death in the family for you. There's just been huge things for you so that you're actually feeling really smashed, but you get here. I'm so encouraged to see that. You come in your weakness, not feeling great, but you get here. I love when I see some of you guys plan your holidays in a way that means you miss as little church as possible. And I know many of you think that way. It's really encouraging to see you do it. So you can go away for 2 weeks and miss 3 weekends of church, or you can go away for 2 weeks and just miss one. And I see many of you working hard to miss as little as possible, and I'm just encouraged when I see that. I'm encouraged when I see you guys signing up for certain sports or choosing certain recreation activities that don't take you out of church. You know, I get encouraged when I see people fitting things in around church, not church in around other things. You know what I mean by that? Because really, if you fit church in around all the other things you want to do in the weekend, which is really just to approach church from a point of view of convenience, or just go when it's convenient, you'll die. Your church life will die. It'll kill you. So don't let this become convenient. There's a warning for you. No, no. Let this blow up your weekend. Let your church shape your whole life. Don't keep it in the convenient box. Seriously. It'll do tragic things for your Christian life. And I get encouraged when I see many of you plan your social life around church things as well. And I see many of you do this. You put your parties on. And Saturday night is an interesting time on the weekend to do church. There's things about it that are quite tricky, actually. And I'm very aware of that. But I see many of you worked hard to put parties on, if you run a party, like before church, so it finishes in time for people to come. Or you put it on after church so people can still come to church and then go to your party. You know what I get stoked on seeing? I get stoked when I see people who are obviously going out to a party after church because it's a dress-up party, yeah? And you're here in church kind of all dressed up. I spotted Chris Galea the other day like in like Grease Lightning kind of outfit, and I went up and I said, mate, good on you for being here, all dressed up. And he goes, what do you mean dressed up? What's kind of got me there for a bit. You were going out to a party afterwards. You weren't. Oh, come on, you're killing me again. Because it's those kind of scenarios, isn't it? You kind of go, oh, well, look, I better stay home and get ready for the party. No, don't miss church for anything. Don't miss church for anything. Fight for it. You've got to fight for this. It's worth fighting for. Jesus died for this. Yeah? And I see people, I see you guys actually place get-togethers at other parts of the weekend. You've got to be careful of what you put on a Saturday afternoon, don't you? Speaking specifically of Saturday people, you know, you've got to be careful what you put on a Saturday afternoon, because Saturday afternoon often just bleeds into Saturday night, and sometimes it's really hard to kind of break up a gathering. But I notice some of you guys, you go to places and you walk in the door, you're like, great to be here, but just so you know, I've got to leave at 4:30. I'm sorry about that, but we're going to get to church. Well done. It's good. I see you guys even put your weddings on other days, because Saturday is a classic time to put your wedding on. And don't hear me saying you can never do that, but I'm just encouraged to see people put their weddings on Sundays or on Fridays. It's like, that's wonderful, because you don't want people to miss church. That's fantastic. You shape your weekend around your church life. Now, of course, there are sometimes those unavoidable absences. Another thing I want to say I'm just really encouraged about is this. I'm often on Sunday mornings here at Woi Woi, or Sunday night here as well. And sometimes I see some of you there on Sunday morning or Sunday night, because you haven't been able to get here It's been a real reason why you cannot get here. And so you're there on a Sunday morning, and I get hugely encouraged when I look out and see one of your faces there, or I see you because I'm sitting near you. It's awesome. Now, obviously, you do need to be a little bit careful about what, you know, what caused you to miss Saturday, so you don't just end up just popping into whatever service is convenient. I did hear someone talk the other day about the way their weekend goes, and they said, oh, look, we start the weekend going, oh, what's going on? Or, oh, well, there's something on telly Saturday night. So, oh, and Sunday morning, oh, someone asked me to come out for a coffee, but they said, but there's always lots of services on the weekend, so you can just kind of see which one's the easiest to get to. And there's always Sunday night. And you know what they called Sunday night? Last minute EV. Well, no, last chance EV. That was it. Last chance EV. Come on. I mean, it's good that you're thinking of getting there, but last chance, I'm just not sure how night EV guys would go, you know, being told that they're just last chance EV, you know, better than nothing EV, hey? Night EV, better than nothing, all right? Don't tell them we said that, all right? The other Sunday morning, I was super encouraged. I looked out and I saw one of our fellas from Saturday night here sitting there in church. And when I spoke to him afterwards, I said, what are you doing here? I usually always ask that question. What are you doing here? And people go, oh, explain, that's all right. He said, look, I had shift work last night, so I couldn't be at church. And he's got shift work again tonight on Sunday night. And so he just had really a few hours on the Sunday to just kind of rest up between shifts. And I said to him, I know he's a surfer. I said, you are aware that the surf's pumping right now? And he looks at me and goes, yeah, I'm not going to miss church. It's just like, yep, yeah, I'm not going to miss church. I mean, that's it, isn't it? Isn't that gold to say, yeah, but I'm not going to miss church? Right there. I don't want to make too much of that particular person or anything, but can you see what's going on for your own heart? And where does church sit in your own heart? Can you remind yourself you've been saved to be gathered? And can you say, this is the life for me now? It's going to mean weekends are different. It's going to be very costly. But what a privilege to pay the cost to gather with these people. Now, I do want to acknowledge that church is not always easy. It's actually often quite difficult. In fact, sometimes being at church can be so difficult for a season that sometimes you actually do need some space to recover from being hurt by certain people in church. I'm aware of that reality. But trust this, if you keep walking with Jesus, he will draw you back to church. Because church is at the very heart of his purposes for all things. And church is what he saved you for. And church is what he delights in. So he will bring you back. But it's not easy. And let me just finish by acknowledging that. You will have moments in your life, if you haven't already had them, where you find yourself even in church thinking, why am I even here? Like, why do I even bother coming? There can be lots of different reasons. You can walk in here and no one's talked to you. You can't find any friends to sit with. You're thinking, why am I even here? Or you can be in here thinking, just not feeling very loved or not feeling very wanted. And you're like, why am I even here? Maybe you're even feeling that way tonight. Or you can be in here thinking, I don't even like the music or the preaching or the people. Why am I even here? Or, and here's a classic one for the stage of life I've just kind of been through, you find yourself standing outside doing the baby jig with the crying baby. And you're sitting there thinking, I don't even get to talk to people. I don't even get to sing and pray. I don't even get to hear the sermon. And you find yourself going, why am I even here? Why do I even bother? And that's where you get the chance to say to yourself, because this is who I am. I'm a gathered one. So I'm going to gather. I was saved for this. And you preach to yourself. And you let it drive how you live. Let me pray for us. Father God, help us to see what's big to you. Help us to see the big thing that you're doing with your world. And help us to see that church is right at the heart of that for you. Help us to see the incredible privilege that it is to be saved and gathered into your people. Help that to kind of resonate through us in our minds and hearts and impact how we live and shape how we approach your church. Please help us, Lord, for your name's sake. Amen.